Wouldn't it be great to have your own small business, right? And when you have that small business, don't you need that support of a big business? Well, let Verizon help champion your small business dream, whether you own a small business or you're scaling one, or maybe even just starting one from scratch. You need Verizon Small Business Days. That's right. From April 22nd through April 28th, you can partner with Verizon business experts for small business support. Paul, what does that mean? It means you can receive a free tech check with one-on-one meetings with a Verizon business expert. Plus, they'll give you personalized advice, solutions that are specific to your small business needs. And you know why? Because Verizon has your back. So don't miss out. Book an appointment today. Just call 1-800-483-4428 or go to verizon.com/small business. Let's clear out winter and clean up the lawn with Spring Black Friday Savings at the Home Depot. Right now, get the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and make your lawn work easier with a powerful 90 miles an hour of cleaning power. And with convenient online shopping, you can order on the app, pick up in the store, and get outside sooner. Get your yard spring ready with the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower. Now just $89 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
When was the last time I took a road trip? How many national parks could I hit in 2 weeks? What about hotels? Wait, hey Erica, how much am I spending on travel?
When your questions about life turn into questions about money, there's Erica, the virtual financial assistant to help you spend, save, and plan smarter. Only from Bank of America. What would you like the power to do? Erica is only available in the English language. You must download the latest version of the mobile banking app, only available on select mobile devices. Your chat may be recorded and monitored for quality assurance. Message and data rates and additional terms may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Today's episode is brought to you by Sling TV, the better way to watch TV. That's right, with Sling TV, you get access to amazing channels for a very low price. That's right, you can watch TV any way that you want for just $20 a month, more than 20 live channels, including AMC, ESPN, Adult Swim, TNT, TBS, and True TV. Start your 7-day free trial at sling.com/bonkers for the best live TV on your tablet, phone, laptop, Roku, Fire TV, or Xbox. Restrictions may apply. Today's episode is brought to you by Squarespace. That's right. Squarespace is the easiest way to create a beautiful website, a blog, or an online store for you and your ideas. Squarespace features an elegant interface, beautiful templates, and incredible 24/7 customer support. Start building your website today at squarespace.com. Enter the offer code BONKERS, that's B-O-N-K-E-R-S, at checkout to get 10% off. It's like Bloodsport meets Bloodsport, but in the past, and with slightly less kicks to the balls. We saw the quest, so you know what that means.
Now it's time for How Did This Get Made? We're gonna have a good time, celebrate some failure, not just be a hater, because you know you wonder, how did this get made? Let's wallow in the mediocrity of subpar art. Perhaps we'll find the answer to the question, how did this get made?
Hello, people of Earth, and welcome to How Did This Get Made? I am your host, Paul Scheer, joined, as always, by Jason Manzoukas. How are you, Jason?
I'm good, Paul. How are you?
Very good. And June Diane Raphael, how are you, June?
I'm good. How are you, Paul?
Very good. Thank you for asking. We have a very special guest joining us today.
Guys, dial down the heat.
You know, we can't control the chemistry that's coming out of these microphones.
God, everybody listening is just so turned on.
June, I hope you have a great podcast.
Thanks, you too, Paul.
Thank you so much.
Oh, God, get a room. Great. Now everybody's pushing pause to just jack it.
And that is our hope, that you do this at least three times during this episode.
Welcome to the jack cast of How Did This Get Made?
I actually think we were written up on the Onion AV Club as a podcast to jack it to.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's they have Podmas.
They have Podjack.
Yeah.
Podjack. All the pods were.
We do not have that. We don't.
We don't. Much as they like you to believe that we have something for podjacking, we do not.
Now back to our coverage of Gimlet shows. We have a very special guest today. You might know him from Guy Code. You might know him from the TV show Younger or his podcast High and Mighty. I consider him a Jean-Claude Van Damme aficionado. Please welcome John Gabris.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Gabris!
Good to see everybody.
A long time coming.
Oh, yeah. And I consider myself a Jean-Claude Van Damme aficionado as well.
Well, when I wrote you to tell you to ask you to come on the show and I told you the movie, you said...
No, you told him.
I told him, you come on the show.
That's Paul Scheer right there. He writes and he says, you're coming.
I
on the show.
I dictate it. Well, there was an uproar because we just did Bloodsport. That was the last episode we did, and they said...
We're going to say uproar in quotes.
It was an uproar. It was
a
podcast uproar that you were not involved in the Bloodsport episode because of your diehard love of Bloodsport.
Diehard Bloodsport fan. Diehard JCVD fan, Seagal, all what you think.
This is your jam?
Yeah. I was born in 1982, and the early 90s to late 90s, I was taking karate classes.
I'm all with you.
My dad had a ponytail. Like, we were just, I was full-blown martial arts white trash. So I was obsessed.
I love that part of your backstory involves your dad having a ponytail.
Because I started taking karate classes.
My dad had a ponytail.
And then he joined after watching one of my karate classes.
Now you see, that's amazing. That's like, and we're both from Long Island, and that's a very Long Island dad thing to do.
Yeah.
Like, now I'm getting into it.
Can I ask you guys a question, though? Do you think your dad got into it because he couldn't handle the idea that you might be able to beat him at something? And he was like, oh, I got to learn these skills so if he comes after me, I can shut this kid down.
Yeah, he can't be the man of the house.
Yeah, too early.
My dad's like, he's going to get me back for beating me all those years.
My dad, I took a karate class in Long Island, but my dad was a dad who was like, we should get out of this one because the dojo closed down. Then the guy started doing classes in his house.
Nope.
And one of the classes was he had a bucket of sand.
Oh, the hand toughening
and the
stuff?
The hand. And my dad's like, what do we do? I'm not paying to put your hand in a bucket, like a straight
I don't even
down.
Know what that is.
My happened? Karate classes were in a dude's garage in Freeport. And he was a Vietnam vet. There's like a POW MIA flag in the dojo.
No offense, but I think you guys were molested.
No. I was 100% molested.
What was
I learned
in the bucket of sand?
Yeah.
That you were touching.
Well, it's like it's strength testing, right?
It's like sand in the bucket, and you just put your and you press your hands into it over and over again to toughen up your joints and the skin on your hands. And
so you're just like burying your fingers.
You're
in the
jamming
sand.
Your hand into the bucket of sand
it's
and pulling
like
it.
Wet sand.
No, it's
no,
dry,
dry sand.
Sand. Yeah, you're just trying to get it further and further in so that your fingers and hands toughen up and strengthen. Yeah, it's not a good idea, especially for a child.
A child should not be doing that.
Yeah, it's like breaking boards.
I'd be much more into a wet sand hand jam than a dry sand hand
wet
jam.
Wet sand feels like you would break a finger, maybe.
I mean, I guess if you're a pussy.
Yeah, maybe you're right. So when I asked you to do this podcast and I told you the movie, you replied by saying it's your 11th favorite Jean-Claude Van Damme film.
Can you run down the top 10? Do you know them?
I don't off the top of my head, but I could tell you that literally almost everything up to including Double Team, Knockoff, and Sudden Death are all ahead of Quest in Death Warrant, Double Impact, Hard Target. These are all, like, these are some...
Universal
Soldier 1 and 2, Cyborg, the precursor.
Street Fighter.
Street Fighter was a bad movie.
Yeah.
These other movies, really? when I was a kid, though, all these other movies weren't bad to me.
Yeah, sure.
You know what I mean? But I think this movie that we're about to talk about was like, for me, seeing my dad cry for the first time and undid. Like, I was like, oh, maybe he's not good in anything.
Yeah. Well, this is an interesting movie because there is something really amazing about Bloodsport. And we just talked about it a bunch. And we didn't get to hear June's opinion on Bloodsport, but you can maybe share some of it today. But it was great because it's like the height of everything. But now this is kind of, and I was thinking about this on the way over, this is like Jean-Claude Van Damme's independent movie. Like, it's like his... Like, he's making choices here. He's directing it.
Poorly. Poorly, I might add.
He is teamed up with Frank Dukes. And if you haven't read the article on Frank Dukes on Slash Film, it will blow your mind. But Frank Dukes, again, to write this story. But it's very... It takes away all the fun of Van Damme, but then replaces it with, like, acting Van Damme.
It takes everything that you liked about Bloodsport. This is the Dumb and Dumberer of Bloodsport. Like,
yes.
It takes everything you liked about the original and waters it down and makes it's so repetitive. It's so similar to Bloodsport, but so worse. Like,
yes.
It's not ratcheted up in any way.
Well, yeah, you know, you would think the move would be like, okay, that worked. So let's take that and let's add this other thing and make it even better. No, let's subtract a lot of the interesting stuff, the splits, the buns, There were no buns.
I thought the buns no were.
There's no splits.
I was glad there weren't any splits. I learned something about myself watching Bloodsport, which is I'm very uncomfortable, and I'm looking at this. Don't worry, but I'm very uncomfortable seeing a man in a split.
Really?
It does something to my insides where I feel like, stop.
You have to turn away when Paul is doing his
When I'm practicing in the morning.
That amount of flexibility in a man, I don't like to see.
Really?
You like your men to be unable to stretch very well? Now, let me ask you this.
Now, Paul has no flexibility in his legs.
Thank you.
Yeah, and we've heard the electric sexuality that is between you.
His legs are like...
I don't have to get into my flexibility in this podcast. Yes, I don't have great flexibility.
We'll have pictures of Paul's legs in the show notes.
That's why I'll show you.
We've worked out together a bunch, and the trainers are shocked that he has zero flexibility.
Well, that's why we don't do...
He has, like, tree trunk legs. Like, they don't give. They don't go anywhere.
Yeah, I will say, this is why we don't do video podcast is because none of Paul's joints are flexible.
No, I am
Paul
standing.
Stands, he's leaning against the wall at like a 45 degree angle.
My legs are the size of Groots. I have two Groots for legs and it's very difficult.
I don't know what it is, but seeing a man in splits like that for so long, and it's interesting too because I do like male gymnasts. I think that's a nice physique. And I can appreciate that. But seeing him in splits was so upsetting to me. So I personally was happy
that
there weren't
no splits.
Any splits.
But let me
this.
Ask you this,
you look super,
June.
Oh, sorry.
Do you mind? If you were to be in a yoga class or something and a guy was to show himself to be very flexible, would you find that unattractive?
If I'm going to be very honest.
I would ask you be only honest.
I don't, I realized it watching
a symbol of a healthy body, the flexibility of one's joints, and you are like, no thank you, barf.
In a man, yes. I don't.
June's, you're
I
old
don't
school.
Love it.
That's old school.
I think that's
you're more of a Jim Varney
like
gal.
Okay.
Yes.
Now let me ask you this: what if?
Yes.
What if he's back?
I don't know why they're so flexible.
You don't know why.
I don't know why.
You don't know what has transpired.
I don't know why they're spending their time getting that flexible. Yeah.
You
but
feel
I
like
don't
it's,
like it.
It's a sign of a wasted life or a man not providing if he can be that flexible. He's like clearly just working
maybe
on
it
himself.
Is, by the way, maybe it's a primitive thing where I'm like, what's going on in your groins? Like, are you, what is happening
is it,
to
yeah,
your
Is
seat?
Your problem?
Like, I don't know.
Is your problem that you find flexibility to be feminine or you're worried they're hurting their dick and balls?
I think maybe a little bit of both.
Interesting.
It's like puts you in a very weak, terrifying position to be that open.
Yeah.
Like your taint is completely like that. It just you're smashing it onto the ground.
Well,
or
and
in
I
like,
always think about how your balls feel because your balls at that point are hitting the ground. But before your leg,
yours would.
Yeah, mine. But like, as you're going down, like, well, I guess if you're not doing it on the ground, he's always on chairs.
I'm assuming. Well, no, he does it on the ground too.
But then you sort of shit on your.
You know, I've stretched Paul out a number of times.
I don't know why.
Please continue.
I don't know why my flexibility is on trial here. This is not a show about how did this get stretched. Is our spin-off show on how. And it's all about stretching people and their
it's behind a paywall, but you're gonna love it.
Stretch him a number of times. And I have done it, and I want you
How
to know
are your
I've given it my all. I haven't held back from trying to make you more flexible.
I have not.
I want you to know that.
But aren't you a little concerned that he's gonna become too flexible and you're
it's
gonna lose
possible.
It for
it's
him?
Not
no. You just
it's
need him to be functioning.
Yeah.
You need to be able to bend down and pick up that soda can, please.
Yeah, I can bend down, please. Don't think me. Of someone who can't bend down.
You're like Rowan Gardner in Rookie of the Year.
A lot of people, I have noticed that you, in order to pick stuff up off the ground, you have one of those grabbers.
Yes, of course. But because it's just it's cumbersome to get down and pick a penny off the ground or anything.
Sure.
So yes,
like maybe leave the penny.
Yeah. I mean, like, if it's heads up, if it's Jason, if it's heads up, that is good luck. And I am not leaving good luck out there.
Not until I get my 12th TV show will I stop picking up pennies off the ground.
Get me.
my God, my
get me my penny grabber.
June, you asked how are we with flexibility. I would like to say I am surprisingly flexible.
For really?
6'2", 300-pound guy.
Maybe it was that karate.
It was. I did a lot of martial arts when I was a kid and was really into it. Mm-hmm. So we were always trying to do splits. My middle brother could when we were younger, and so we were like constantly competing. My brother was 3 years younger than me and better at everything we ever did.
Right.
And he jumped off the high dive before I did, and he rode a bike before I did.
By the way, I thought you were just going to tell us that he committed suicide. He jumped off the... I was like, oh, no.
He did everything better than me.
I was going to kill myself.
He jumped off the Golden Gate Bridge before I could.
That motherfucker has stolen my suicide thunder. I just got to build up my podcast following then kill myself.
And that's great. That's great. But so, you can't do splits.
I can't do splits, but I can like sit in a full... I can sit in a full squat for a while. You know, I could do like the... They call the Asian squat or the paleo chair or whatever.
I think it's just splits.
I can do that.
Yeah. I mean, Jason, can you do a split?
No, I can't do a split, but I am very flexible.
Really? Yeah. How flexible are you?
I'm pretty flexible.
He could do the French. Wow. He can't do a split, but he could do the French oyster, which is a very.
I don't even know what that is. The French oyster.
If there is anyone
like a sex position,
it is. If there was anyone in the world I thought would know what a French oyster is, it would be you, Jason.
Oh man, I feel bad now.
It's not a fingering position, so you don't know.
Yeah. Pass. But I'm a hard pass.
I remember the French oyster from my parents' The Art of Love book. You remember that?
Oh my God.
They like had it up, took it off the shelf one
like
time.
Like on an upper shelf?
Yeah,
when you were like, wait, there are books up here, guys.
Yeah, for those of you listening to this, before the internet, you used to have to jerk off to your mom's stolen books.
Yes. Or like something. Like the new Our Bodies Ourselves.
Yeah.
I just saw somebody walking around the other day, and I was like, how do you find this acceptable? It was like a black t-shirt, and on the back, it was just a bunch of sexual positions. Like, and it was like... Yeah, like it was like, and I guess like when I was a kid, we were wearing like these big Johnson t-shirts, which are really funny. You know,
soccer players do it for 90 minutes.
Yeah, like, but I just thought that was like such a funny, crazy thing to be like, I'm gonna put on my sex positions t-shirt. Yeah. I can't
imagine. I need people to know that I need a visual aid to tell me how to fuck, and I'm gonna put it on my body.
And it's basically like treating other people like I need to help them,
right?
Because I know this. It's on my back for you.
I endorse this.
When you're waiting in line at 7-Eleven, you can pick up a few pointers.
Yep.
Before I go in the room with my wife, I like to look at the back of my shirt and go, all right, number 6A is what I'm going to do in there.
So, all right, this movie, like going back to the idea that it is very much the same exact idea of Bloodsport, taking out a lot of the fun. It's 8 years later, and the first thing that, well... First of all, it's a period movie. When that comes
out, it says 1920. I'm like, why does he have to do this?
Oh, I got excited.
Wow. No, I remember seeing this when I was a kid. The two things that broke my heart were PG-13. If they came up in a movie that I was about to watch, I got so mad because that means no tits, buns, or murder.
Well, you could get buns in a PG-13.
You can
right?
get buns, I think, for a quick
dude
flash.
Buns. Dude buns.
Yeah, dude buns.
But maybe it's a different time.
And then when it said 1920, I was like, oh, fuck this movie.
Because like basically a period movie and an action movie, besides like The Untouchables or something, it takes away, you know, the fun is not going to be there 100%.
Well, I mean, like, there's a version of this movie. Like I, for example, loved, like, the movie.
By the way, I just thought of, like, 10 examples where I'm totally wrong.
Yeah, I loved the movie Ong Bak.
Right.
Right? And that's, like, a period movie. Yeah, it's a Muay Thai fighting movie that's, like, unbelievable fight sequences. And it's, like, in a distant past, blah, blah, blah. This could have had the fun of that. It simply did not.
Well, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I did fall asleep for 15 minutes of the movie.
Yes, you didn't miss much.
That's a major disclaimer. And I had a very hard time.
How dare you?
I had a very hard time watching this movie. I was really checking out a lot. So forgive that. But I could not follow this. I could not follow.
What?
I actually want someone to distill what the f-
I do have a couple. I do
about.
Have a couple of plot point issues. I think before we even get into the main meat, we just have to talk about the opening scene, which is amazing.
You mean the bookend? The old man? Yeah.
Old man Van Damme.
You can tell that Van Damme directed this movie because he's trying. He's like, there must have been 20 things he wishes he could have done in movies, and he does it all in this movie.
That's what I think is so fucking interesting about this movie. Yeah. It's like, all right, I'm an action star, but this is my chance to show people they're wrong about the muscles from Brussels. I'm also the actor from Brussels.
And the director and the story by from Brussels.
Yeah. He is like, and so he comes in old man makeup, and then, in this weird sequence with like a very prominent Schlitz sign.
Yes, yes.
Almost a distractingly so giant neon sign.
I thought when I saw that, I was like, oh man, you get like brand sponsorship and this movie could only get Schlitz. Yes. We'll give you $80 if you put this neon sign up in
four
the back.
6-packs and $80, so whatever you want. And then like these jive turkeys, like characters that are straight up out of The Warriors walk in.
That's a great 90s movie trope though, is that the bad guys, because they didn't want to make them all black or all Latino in those gangs, where it's just like one of each race and they all dress like cyberpunks.
Yes.
That's in like every and movie.
The most threatening they are is a switchblade.
Yeah, they always like, have a switchblade.
Come on, old man, give us the money.
And they come in a fraction of a second after Jean-Claude Van Damme does.
Yeah.
In an empty bar that doesn't seem like, by the way, even if they took the till of that bar, what are they taking?
Like $25?
Yeah, I mean, max.
Why don't I put a little bit of whiskey in that coffee, huh?
I was like, who the fuck is this actor?
Yeah.
He's like looking down the barrel saying.
They not fair to Irish people in this movie either, because he's a little Irish in that movie and the cops are super Irish.
That whole, I mean, I don't want to keep powering forward, but after this scene where we see old Van Damme, we see the other Van Damme that he always wanted to be, French Clown Van Damme.
Yeah, Arlecchino Van Damme.
That was, I remember seeing this when I was a kid. First of all, this came out the same year as Bloodsport 2. How weird is that? That they both came out the same year.
He is not in Bloodsport 2.
He's not in Bloodsport 2. This is like a spiritual sequel. It's the 10 Cloverfield Lane. And That broke my heart. I saw this one in the theaters. Bloodsport, I watch on VHS. I saw this in the theaters. And when my fucking idol, the Muscles from Brussels, this guy's such a bit, when he shows up in clown makeup and like fucking period gear.
It's 1925.
And he's on stilts?
He's wearing like a newsy cap and has like French clown, like a Marcel Marceau face.
Yes, like mime face. Yes. Yeah.
And then he stands up and he is on stilts. And I just about lost my mind.
It's just, he clearly wanted to do
that. But also doing a joke, too, because I feel like when he was sitting down, he's getting his shoes shined, but to be on stilts.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like in his mind, he's like, it's a joke.
He also is the leader of a gang of street children?
He's like Fagin. He's a bad guy,
does
right?
Does he think he is a child?
Guy. Dude.
Well, I want to get into his journey for the entire movie, and this is why I was really baffled. Okay, and this is jumping ahead a little bit.
Please.
But when we find out that his mother died and I guess sent him to America with a governess who I think then abandoned him on
she
the
just
street.
Straight she up, gives him a note and walks
she's
away.
Like, you wait away. Right here. I'll be right back, Gonzo.
But did anyone else – are we supposed to believe that what she read was not actually in the note?
Because he picks it up.
He picks the note up. I thought he would, like, at some point, like, pull the note out of his pocket or something.
At this moment, we should also probably say that none of this ever comes into play in the film whatsoever. This flashback is exclusively for Van Damme to work out mom shit.
So well, again, strange is that you have no idea why. I don't know what he's after for the entire movie. I really don't. I don't know. And again, maybe it was in the 15 minutes I missed. But
it keeps on changing.
I don't know if he does really want to go back to America to be with the street children. I mean, is that it?
I think he wants to go back to America to rescue the street kids.
But he does leave them for a couple of years.
Easily. But this is at a time where years meant nothing.
But here's my question. He seems to be the leader of a child gang.
Correct.
Like Fagin, like, go out and rob the rich and bring it back to us.
Yes.
And that to me seems like he's a bad dude.
No, he's not a bad dude.
No, that's like he's selling himself as a little bit of a Robin Hood situation, I think.
And he's stealing from, like, the mob.
Yeah.
He's stealing from, like, okay, bad guys or whoever.
So he's so Robin. Can we listen to Jean-Claude Van Damme talk to children?
I don't think you can criminalize street children anyway. I mean, even if they were just stealing from.
Wait a second.
Because what you're implying is that, like, even Fagin and the street children and Oliver are bad somehow.
I think Fagin is bad.
Okay.
You don't think Fagin is bad?
I don't really remember Fagin. I just remember.
I feel like Fagin's like, hey, kids, work for me, and I'll give you some food and stuff like that, but we'll steal money.
Oh, okay.
I feel like that's what he's doing.
At what age does a child become a legitimate criminal, June?
18.
So, up until 18, kids can do whatever they want.
Street kids, specifically street kids. Street if you have kids. A house.
Urchins, your urchins, your newsies, they can do whatever they
so
want.
So they're free will.
Your hoodlums, your no good
vagrants, your hobos.
I believe is when they're tried as adults and not juvies.
Okay, so
juvies.
Now, what we have not realized about June, yes, I have a lack of flexibility, but June also was a juvie. She went to, how many years did you do in juvie?
A few.
But so you believe that as long as, like, these kids aren't criminals because they're not, they're only being told by Jean-Claude's the criminal.
I don't think he's a criminal. I don't know why you're saying any of them are criminals. He's trying to feed children.
Wait, but wait a second. He fights police. Yeah. He, like, kicks a policeman in the face.
Those, okay, that police force, by the way, was opening up fire with machine guns on children.
That was the mob boss.
That was the mob boss.
Okay, so.
By the way, I want to talk about that. The police are the ones like, all right, Dubois, get down off
why
those
everybody
things.
Knows Chris Dubois?
They're all Officer Crumkeys, right? Yes. They're all
Listen to the Irish cops. This is here their voices. They're pretty great.
Dubois, I want you and our kids off the street. I mean it, Dubois. This is it.
So that's a little taste of, like, what their voices are like. But
I don't want to get into, like, police politics here, but I do feel like to
you don't think this is the place to
I don't think this is the place or the time. But to say get your kids off the street, I mean, where should they go? What resources and services are available?
He's clearly a criminal that's running a child criminal.
He's doing, like, a distraction for them to pickpocket people, right? And I think that's what
they're stealing from the mob, and they're getting food.
But doesn't make a difference what they're doing with the money. They're still stealing it.
Okay, well, show me the social services that are available to them.
This is pre-New Deal. So there's not a lot of
social
services.
There's not a lot going on.
It's okay to steal.
I believe, and I might be wrong, but I think that that all of these boys that he's running with eventually mate with all of the girls that are in Annie.
Yes.
And by the way, I do want to be fair. Just if you are listening to the podcast, you should know, and we put this disclaimer here, that June does run an organized group of children to do her bidding and kind of stealing and stuff like that.
Well, and because she knows that legally they cannot be held responsible until they are 18.
What's the oldest person in your group?
I mean, you remember, by the way, when we were watching the scene, I said, I will have to, if a child gets hurt here, I will have to leave the room and stop watching the movie. I mean, I felt so deeply for those little street urchins.
Well, but lucky for you, nothing in this film has consequences.
That's true.
Like, literally.
Let's listen to JCVD talk to kids. This is a great speech. So they just come and they rob the mob, and here we go.
Did I tell you what? We're rich! Yeah. With this, we buy respect. If we want something, we take it. Forever and ever.
These are not good life lessons.
I'm just realizing something right
That's
now.
That's also not how money works.
I think, and I hear now in this speech why you think he's a bad guy.
Yeah.
But I do think what must have happened was that governess or whoever that was left him. He was a street kid and probably had his own gang. And those kids that he came up with, who knows what happened to them? And he just stayed within the community of street urchins.
And he, like, rose to the top as a bad guy.
As a 38-year-old.
Like, he's not young.
He is not young in this movie either.
Like, what?
And by the way,
what is going on? Like, who is he dating from this pool of children? Like, what's going on?
And he's basically saying, if we have money, and now whatever we want, we're going to take.
Yes.
Not buy.
If we, says, if we see something, we'll take it. Like
this
said,
buys
like,
us respect.
That's
and
not
then he
how
goes,
it works.
Forever and ever.
Yeah.
These poor kids are being so misled. That's a bag with like $9,000 in it. Which in the 20s, that's a lot of money.
A lot of money.
But that's not in perpetuity. Yep. They're not investing.
And there's like about 30 kids in there.
Show me their road to opportunity. You know, I don't know where it is.
Every single one of these kids is on opium by the end of the movie. Like, in the 2 years that he's away, they are all dead from
opium.
That's what's
you said you fell asleep for 15 minutes.
Yep.
I did not, but I thought I did because I kept going like, wait a minute, how did he get to this island?
That's what I wrote.
What about the kids? And I kept like going like, does he revisit America?
They also keep giving us like time markers. Like when Roger Moore says to him, okay, there's going to be a boat to take you back to America in a month. The next cut is 6 months later.
And it's not even to Van Damme.
Nope.
The cut, you never see. They're like, now we're pushing ahead, but they're like, he's become a Muay Thai master. I'm like, we saw him carry bamboo and then cut 6 months later, and he's like, you're the best fighter we've ever had.
Nope. And here's the other problem with it. The movie opens, after the old man image, it opens with these scrolls being delivered all around the world. And so,
love, by the way. loved this.
The scrolls in the beginning.
My favorite is James Remar gets his scroll inviting him to the match and has to open it while wearing boxing gloves.
and the way that they deliver these messages, it's kind of great. Like, there's a dinner theater fighting experience where people are like
in the suits. French guy in suspenders.
Yeah. It's amazing. But everyone gets delivered these scrolls, and then I'm assuming, because like scroll, that when we see Jean-Claude Van Damme, all of a sudden he's gonna have this run with the cops, and then someone's gonna be like, Here's your scroll.
No.
Then he has a whole plot. He goes on a boat. Let's say conservatively, he's on that boat for at least a month, maybe 2 months.
Oh, much more than that.
Enough to get that little Thailand.
Right. Okay. From New York to Thailand. From New York City.
He stows away on a boat, becomes a boat slave.
Yes.
For months.
So let's say conservatively 3 months. All right. Conservatively. All right. Yeah.
You're saying conservatively?
Yeah.
Conservatively.
Okay. As you pointed out on that boat, he's just simply moving like.
Oh, why is he moving?
Wait, especially that's clearly more than a month into the boat ride. Yes. They're like, you know what? Let's get those shit. It might rain today.
We gotta bring those bags downstairs.
Like, why?
They're running guns from New York under the auspices that it's grains from New York. And that's the other crazy thing is Van Damme, they're like, a 10-year-old kid goes to Van Damme who just got shot, who was shot by a gangster.
Yeah, who, by the way, took a great bullet. He was a real kid.
The reason he got caught was he was looking through, they were arguing Van Damme, and then he just shoves the boxes he's standing behind.
Yeah.
It's not like a cliche, like where a cat makes a noise. He just shoves the boxes, the guy turns, shoots a child, and then the kid is hurt, and he goes, fuck it, you gotta run. Yeah. The mob is gonna get you. Yeah. The mob doesn't kill kids because they're the mob?
And also, it's like they're gonna blame you, but there's mafia dudes all around. There's like machine guns that they're holding. It doesn't make any sense.
And then he just gets on a boat and leaves these kids that all he cares about is taking care of them. And then
conservatively, how long do you say he's on that boat?
Conservatively?
Yeah.
I'm gonna go liberally, 3.5 months. All right.
Liberally, three and a half months.
I do want to talk about all this. I'm just gonna say, just for the timeline argument,
I'm gonna say independently.
Yeah.
Like
greenish,
4 months.
Greenly.
June, matter of factly, how long do you think he's on that boat?
I don't know. I honestly thought it could have been years.
Okay, so
I had no idea.
Years. Okay, now we know boat? When. Now I, we no, know when I, you fell asleep.
I didn't know. The whole marking of time in this movie was insane to me.
Hey, everybody! We have to take a quick break in the show. We'll be right back after these words from our sponsor. Listen up. You're an adult or you're trying to be an adult. You need to learn how to fucking cook, okay? And you know, I know what you're going to say. It's too hard. Where do I get the recipes? I can't go out. I'm busy. I barely have time to watch YouTube videos of cats playing with the arm. Well, let me tell you, Blue Apron has got you covered. For less than 10 bucks a meal, Blue Apron is going to deliver you all the fresh ingredients that you need to create home-cooked meals in less than 40 minutes. No overwhelming trips to the grocery store. No more sad takeout. That pad thai that looks like, when was this even made? Sorry, Panda Express. I'm going to be eating some delicious food like real live panda. No, not real live panda. No, Blue Apron does not serve panda meat, but they have amazing food. Amazing food like barbecued salmon and sweet mashed potatoes and pear mostarda. Mostarda, I don't even know what that is. Or cheeseburgers on English muffins with Roscoe potatoes. Oh my gosh. Or pork chops over goat cheese polenta with English peas, pearl onions, and mint. Or chicken parmesan with asparagus and fresh pasta. Guys, the choice is amazing. Plus, they have amazing vegetarian options. Just listen to this. Ricotta pesto pizza with asparagus. Or Jamaican Me Crazy inspired curry chili with potatoes, collards, and roti bread. Oh my gosh. The choices are amazing. All right, you're going to cook with ingredients that you've never used before, and you're going to make food that is between 500 to 700 calories per portion. It's delicious. It's good for you. And right now, you can get your first two meals free. Wait, say what? That's right. Your first two meals free if you go to blueapron.com/bonkers. That's blueapron.com/bonkers. Now, a lot of people will post on our Twitter and our Facebook page, and they'll show me pictures of their meals, and they say, this is actually a really good service. I like it a lot. So why don't you be one of those people that take pictures of your food, but make it your free food? That's right. Go to blueapron.com/bonkers. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. Today's sponsor is Casper Mattresses. That's right. Casper Mattresses. I sleep on a Casper. Let me tell you, they sent one to me and I was like, I don't know about this. I put it down and I was like, holy shit, this is more comfortable than the bed I've been sleeping on that was very expensive, 4 years. All right, it is amazing. And you can now get $50 towards any mattress purchase that you're going to make if you go to casper.com/how, okay, and then use the code how. Here's the deal. Try this mattress. It's got just the right sink, just the right bounce. It's got these two technologies that work together to give you a great night's sleep. Let me tell you about these technologies. You got latex foam, you got memory foam. It remembers how you like to sleep, and then it kind of cups you. All right, you're in like a giant, like, catcher's mitt of deliciousness. It makes sleeping great. Plus, they have a risk-free trial and return policy. They deliver it straight to you. You can try it for 100 days. That's over 3 months, okay? And if you're not happy, then pick it back up and it's gone from your life. Let me tell you something. I'm not lying to you. This is a comfortable mattress. It's $500 for a twin size, $950 for a king size. Compare that to the industry standards. We're taking it down from the outside, all right? Because Casper can deliver direct to you. They don't have to have a showroom or a floor where some weird guy's like, yeah, test it out. You can't test it out in a store, you fucking dummy. So get $50 towards any mattress purchase by going to casper.com/how and use the code how. Terms and conditions apply. And now back to the show. So he's on this boat for a number of months. He then goes to Muay Thai Island for 6 months. We know that.
No, he's there longer than 6 months. There's just a six-month jump.
Oh, okay.
To Roger Moore.
He doesn't leave immediately after that. He's still there, I think, okay, for so some period of time.
So, like, at least say we can argue that a year has passed from when those scrolls were delivered to when the fight begins.
At least it seems to be like
it took Remar a year to get there. Yeah. It took the fucking fencer guy a year to get there.
It's not like they send those scrolls out like, hey, in 2 years, come to the special fight.
I guess it's like a wedding
fight.
Invitation.
Yeah. Save the date scroll.
The other thing about this movie. There's not a better thing for me as an action movie fan. There's not a better thing than, like, look at all these different types. Like, Bloodsport doing it literally the best of, like, Monkey Man, sumo wrestler guy. These are such watered-down versions of these badasses that they try to make a fat man standing up out of a hot tub seem intense.
Oh, yeah.
Like, his tits bounce, and it's like, dun-dun, and he's like, Japan. It's like, wait a minute. That guy looks just like me. Like, I have the same exact body as that guy.
Yeah.
And they're saying, like, oh, fuck.
Oh, he's terrifying.
I mean, basically, the whole movie revolves around a stereotype fight. It's like, what stereotype from what country can we get
like
away
the
with?
The Spanish guy who's doing the flamenco? Like, not a martial art.
All his moves are flamenco based. It's crazy.
He's doing spin kicks, not flamenco style, but
that's
he does stand with one
thing.
Arm. No, it's not. Also,
what this movie posits is that every single country has its own unique fighting style. You know what I mean? So that Japan is represented by sumo, Brazil is represented by like capoeira, like Thailand is represented by Muay Thai, like every whatever, blah, blah,
and
blah.
And then there's like a British fencer.
Yeah.
And he gets the scroll and they're like, oh, P.S., you can't use a sword. So I hope you can translate fencing, which is literally not dangerous at all. I hope you can translate to that to bare knuckle fist fighting.
Hardcore fist fighting. And then and we're going out of order, but who cares? There's like the guy who he trains with on Muay Thai Island, who he doesn't seem to have a great relationship with. They don't really even show him a Mr. Miyagi relationship, which is, again, he's taken out all the things that make Bloodsport interesting.
Yes. He literally never see him train unless I was asleep.
Thought I fell asleep because I literally was like, okay, they're just at Lord Hobbs playing, you know. Yeah. They must have just needed to get more Roger Moore screen time.
Roger Moore, amazing in this movie. I am a big fan.
I mean, he's great in everything.
And another opportunity for him to pronounce the name Smith as Smythe.
Right. Yes.
Now, I have to ask, did you notice a difference between... I mean, I don't know Muay Thai that well, but I felt like I never saw a difference in the way he was fighting.
No, that's what's crazy is, and the other crazy thing is that Hobbs says, he's the best fighter I've ever seen. And he watched him do 30 seconds of his hands chained together, choking a guy on a boat while there was a gunfight going on. He's like, we're going to sell him for big bucks. It's like, where the fuck did you get that idea from?
And why would you sell a guy who's a fighter to an island full of fighters? Like, we don't need any...
I think he was basically like sold him onto Muay Thai Island to be like, this guy's a fighter. You can use him.
For what purpose? The whole island.
I think they were just trying to get some bucks off him.
That made no sense. But then the guy he sold him to on the Muay Thai Island. And again, maybe I was asleep, but it seemed like he felt he got, you know, the raw end of the bargain.
Yes, that's, well,
but
that's,
why? That's yes.
Because
I couldn't understand.
I think because it appeared in the beginning like he thought maybe he'd paid too much for JCVD.
He said about Jean-Claude Van Damme, he's like, if he loses in the first round, this is not an investment.
Exactly.
But right. But that makes, there's so much shit, this whole part that, They show him twice on Muay Thai Island, once carrying bamboo sticks, watching guys kicking on the beach. And then they show him defend a kid from being bullied. That's the only time they show him on the island. There's no training sequence. How does this not have a moment
nothing.
Where he's doing splits
yes.
or learning Muay Thai? That's
well,
the
also,
biggest and best trope from these movies yeah, is training montage.
My,
yes.
my problem with this movie, and again, maybe I was asleep. You know,
I will tell you.
Parts.
I will tell you when you were asleep.
But,
just by the
okay,
way,
fine. But it felt to me like
I know
I
when she was
never,
asleep.
You know, he was sold as a slave. It seems almost twice. Once to
yes,
the boat.
Guy, yes, and then back to.
Well, he wasn't sold the first time. He was just a slave on the boat because
he was
fell
a
slave
into
a
boat.
Fine.
He was
a
stowaway.
On the boat, and then he was like a fighter slave to the guy in the Muay Thai Island.
MTI.
Yes, but it seemed like wow. If I was in that position, I would revolt against fighting. I would feel like fighting to me is being a slave, because he's really being trained as a slave.
But fighting,
on that island.
But fighting, I think, is his only way out.
But you know, wouldn't you make the argument but, that if you're making a movie,
otherwise you're just going to be like moving
then,
bamboo forever?
But then he cares so much about fighting the rest of the movie, and I couldn't understand
to get the gold dragon to free the kids.
The
right?
motivation makes no sense. He's like, once I get this gold dragon, I split the money with this guy who's already sold me into slavery.
By, yes. And he was yes. untrustworthy.
And then I can take that money and bring it back to the kids who have all definitely
right.
been killed at this
and
point.
And at this point, yeah. we're saying it's at least 9 months, if not more.
Right. Conservatively.
Conservatively.
But this is what's even weirder is, okay, so James Bond, Roger Moore, sells JCVD to the guy on MTI, Muay Thai Island,
yes.
okay? Disappears. 6 months later, Roger Moore comes back. And he's like, oh, look, you're still here. Ha, ha, ha.
Oh, no, I think
no,
6 months later,
no,
they're
sorry,
in Bangkok.
Bangkok. Yeah. Sorry,
he doesn't
sorry.
Even expect to
That's
see
right.
him.
But because JCVD is not just like fighting normal fights,
yeah.
I guess. But then JCVD comes to Roger Moore and is like, this is where I got confused. He's like,
yeah.
do you know about the Lost City and this big secret fight?
That whole exchange is like a who's on first.
Yes.
It's like Lost City, Golden
yeah.
Dragon,
Golden Dragon.
It's
yeah.
like, yeah. this is a fucking comedy sketch.
And it's like all exposition, and it basically sets up the point of the movie, which we are like conservatively
yes.
1 hour in now.
Yes.
Dude, they set this up. They do the scrolls thing,
yep.
then do 17 minutes of Van Damme backstory. And
yep.
then they're like, all right, remember that scroll thing? Now it's
now,
coming in a book.
Why would he ever want to partner up with his previous owner?
I know, right?
I mean, that's what
that's,
it's like
because
so bad.
He has
that's
no
that
options.
Slave mentality.
He has no options.
That's like that you get in that zone. That, what is it called?
But
with
then
the
he
syndrome?
Goes to
Stockholm Syndrome.
But then he goes to, you know, so far as to even free them when they're enslaved later in the movie.
There's something so weird here because my gut would be, just simplify it. He's a guy who gets in trouble with the law, falls in the boat, has no martial arts training, goes to Muay Thai Island, becomes an amazing
right,
fighter,
that,
and
yeah.
then fights.
That's the most...
And then fights as the representative of Muay Thai Island.
Because
they've given him an identity, and then he's able to win the Golden Dragon and bring it back to the kids.
Yes.
I'm a new man, I learned martial
and
arts.
And yes. free all of Muay Thai Island, then go and free all of the kids. He frees everyone. Instead, he's just like the pawn of con men, basically.
But, so you think everyone on Muay Thai Island is a slave?
I think they want to be there.
Oh,
I think they
okay.
want to...
Yeah.
They sound like they're a revolutionary group, and that's why they buy the guns.
Oh,
like,
okay.
I think
that's
they're,
true.
I think they're like trying to do a coup.
But then why does the owner of Muay Thai Island go when he finds out that that JCVD is going to fight in the big tournament? He's like, oh, why would you do that after all this training I just gave you? But then you cut to the big fight tournament, and he's got his own guy there, too. He's like, oh, fuck it. I mean, yeah, you know, I'm in. I'm definitely going to be there.
The other thing this movie's missing is, how is he a good fighter? All we see is that he's a street performer, and then he's like a total... Oh,
and then everybody, James Remar, everybody is like, he's literally the best fighter I've ever seen.
He gets...
Always after, like... two small demonstrations of fighting.
The James V. Martin you're talking about is a boxer squares up,
yep.
Van Damme kicks him in the leg, and he goes, that's the best fighter I've ever been involved in. It's like, no, you're a boxer. You've never been
aside.
Kicked. Yeah.
He is also James Remar.
This is where June fell asleep.
James Remar.
He puts his life on the line.
Yes. He basically, James Remar, who has been invited to the top secret Lost City fight, he's gotten a scroll because he's the heavyweight champion of the world.
Yeah, he's
by the
best
way, James Remar is amazing in this movie. I want to play this scene. So basically, James Remar gets one kick, and he's like, I'm out of here, and he runs away into the desert.
Just to make sure if people don't know, James Remar...
Dexter's dad.
Dexter's dad. I know him as Richard, Samantha's boyfriend on...
The billionaire.
On Sex and the
if
City.
If you don't think I have the Sex and the City box set, I do. The one that comes in Lucite with a heel on it.
But what's worse, you're married, I'm not.
Yeah, fair enough. But the show came out when I was like 17.
Let's listen to, this is the craziest moment, because basically they steal James Remar's invite. And again, like...
His identity, arguably. They're pretending to be him.
Exactly. So
this
now,
is a piece of information I needed.
Yeah, this is where you
now it all locks in.
So basically,
what if you were like, oh, that makes entirely...
Everything's lined up.
So now, take a listen to this. This is the craziest, in my opinion, the craziest scene in the movie, because now JCVD is like, I am... Maxi, I am the American heavyweight champion of the world, and then this happens.
Maxi Devine of America!
He stands up.
That's me.
Oh, then James Remar walks in.
Maxi Devine, heavyweight champion of the world. This man is a better fighter than me. And as the former heavyweight champion, I turn my title over to him.
And he's carrying a belt on him.
Yes.
This here's your man, Christopher Dubois.
Dubois will be granted a chance to prove if he is a worthy combatant in the first round. If not,
this is the craziest
part. Divine shall pay the penalty and never leave the Lost City.
What?
What the fuck?
All right, that's good.
If I'm Dubois in that moment, I go, you know what? That seems like too much pressure. Maxi, you just fight.
Just JK, I will fight.
So why does Maxi give up his own title, though? Just out of...
Out of respect, because he lost. They sort of justify it in the next line. He goes, I wanted to see the American flag flying at the end of this tournament. So what he means is he just wants America to win.
And America as represented by Jean-Claude Van Damme, who is definitively not American.
And not fighting in an American style.
The thing about it is that he... What they're not saying is that Remar is like, oh, I didn't know you're allowed to kick in this thing. I'm going to be fucked. I normally just box. I wear gloves. I'm 50.
Yeah.
I'm like maybe conservatively 49 years old.
49 years old. I am the heavyweight champion of the world, but am maximum 175, 5'8".
And no definition Zero. Really
but
either.
But that is, to be fair.
To the 1920s.
He's the 20s, like pugilist style. Yeah. Pull the waistband up above your tits.
I have a lot. June? Okay, sorry. Go ahead.
My issue was also, and then we can go to June 2, like, was that the judge was so loosey-goosey. He was like, okay, yeah, sure. And then like later on.
And then
like,
later they changed the rules again.
He's like, okay.
They're constantly changing the rules of this ancient tournament,
like this tournament
just to make it easier for JCVD to compete and win.
I sent all these monks. I taught them English. I taught them how to travel around the world to deliver these scrolls. And now people are just wandering into my tournament.
And you fucks from America think you can just like let somebody else fight in your stead? Well, screw you.
That would be like the equivalent of like in this March Madness right now. Like if just like a community college is like, hey, we kind of want to play. I think we're pretty good. We'd love to play. And they're like, yeah, all right, get in here.
No, it would be like if a community college randomly in one game beat Duke.
Yeah.
And Duke was like, you know what? Put them in the Final Four, not us.
No, beat them in a game of horse. If we want to keep this analogy going.
Yes.
Two guys, two street ballers beat Duke in a game of horse. Duke goes to the NCAA and goes, I can't do this.
Put them in. Put them in the Final Four. They're the best team we've ever seen. We will step
Here's
down.
Here's my question, though. At one point, doesn't Jean-Claude Van Damme, isn't he conspiring to just steal the golden horse?
Yes, right. That's Roger Moore and Jack McGee's plan.
That's their plan.
That's their plan.
That
but is he complicit
that
with
he
that?
He is, yes, that he's kind of along for the ride.
I had trouble with that.
No, I think he thinks he's going to win it.
Yes.
He thinks he's going to win it legally because that's the prize.
Well, no, he does. I don't know that he does because until James Remar lets him perform.
He's still a slave to them also.
Yes, but until, like, when they are pretending to be James Remar's, like, valet and whatever, Jean-Claude Van Damme doesn't think he's going to get to fight.
Oh, no, he's because I thought their plan was to steal Remar's identity so he could fight.
No, but then, but then Roger Moore goes, when he's busy thinking about fighting, we'll steal.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Because I don't think they can steal Maxie's.
By the way, they're trying to steal a fucking.
Why do they call him Maxie?
They're trying to steal giant fucking. Like, it would be the. I'm trying to think of how big this dragon is.
It's the size of the bull down by the.
Yes, by Wall Street.
Wall Street. Yeah.
It's solid gold.
Solid gold. And. Oh, we got to talk about.
We got to talk about the Nazi blimp.
The Germans.
We got to talk about the blimp.
That's how they're.
Well, you had a question for June, which I know.
We will get to it. We're not there yet.
Okay, yeah.
And I think it's going to be a real. We'll see how it goes.
To me, I felt like. Stealing that thing was a flawed idea because they're in a lost city with a practically an unmovable, undisguisable object. Like, you can't just get out of town with.
And that they have to put on a boat, right? Like, that's the only thing that they can get it out of there on. And I don't know how you add 3 tons of gold to a boat and still get it back to the States or London or wherever they're from.
First, you have to put it on a horse. Then you'd have to put it on an elephant. Then you'd have to put it on a fucking boat.
And none of them
boat.
Like riding elephants.
Well, the other
thing. No. Although JCVD did ride an elephant to the premiere.
Oh my God, amazing.
I have pictures of it and I will put them up.
By the way, this is a movie, I think maybe speaks to your PG-13 problem, is where multiple characters refer to their butts and their buns as rumps.
Yeah.
Like, two different characters are like, oh, my rump is sore. And
that
I was like, what?
That felt to me like a translation issue. Like,
yeah.
Right. That's like what Jean-Claude Van Damme
calls
like,
his butt. Yeah.
Yeah.
Another great moment is when, now we're jumping back a little bit, but when he is chained up and the slaver who enslaved him is going to kill him now because they're arriving at the island. It's like, you have a slave that's working for you. Yeah. You could sell him too.
Oh, yeah.
But instead,
or
you're going to
keep him for the next
run. Right, exactly. But instead, you're going to kill him. He's handcuffed in a bicep pose. Like, he's handcuffed in a double bicep pose where it's over the gate and he's just standing there flexing. His arms are huge.
Yes.
And he allegedly has no fight training or something like that. He's been just a street performer. And he's not even a street performer. Like, why wasn't he an acrobat or something that would justify why he's flexible and insanely ripped?
Yeah.
No, he's a street clown who happens to be.
Well, I will say this.
It takes some physical ability to get on those skills.
I will say this. Like, if shit goes down.
I do.
If shit goes down, what I am going to do is I am going to round up as many clowns and acrobats as I can, and because those are going to be the best fighters.
You know what?
Like, that's where it's at.
Probably
my army is an army of clowns.
Mr. Miyagi taught painters and car waxers how to be the best karate.
I was bummed in that opening sequence that they didn't play that out a bit longer, him on stilts.
His clowning?
Well, just him fighting on stilts.
Sure. You'd like to have seen him do more clowning,
interesting.
Too.
Well, look, I...
You're a theater buff.
June does, like legit, like clowning.
I do like clowning, but I also...
Of course.
But I also wanted to see... I mean, it is fascinating, these people who walk around on stilts. I mean,
it is?
I think so.
You're talking about a movie in which a...
Well, you know they don't do it in real life. They just do it as a performative
thing. No, they're always in their stilts.
I like that this is a movie about an ancient fighting tournament where people from all over the world fight each other to death. And you're like, it is pretty interesting that people walk on stilts.
I was watching them. I'm like, that's a crazy thing that people do.
When I was a kid, I love that. When I was a kid, I had an idea for a restaurant where all the tables were like 15 feet in the air and all the seats were lifeguard chairs.
Oh.
Fun.
And all the waiters were on stilts.
Fun, that's awesome. Jason.
That's awesome.
Don't say that out loud. Now you've just given up that amazing idea.
Boom. Wow. Put it out there.
But I guess you guys aren't that interested in it, but at what point do you get on stilts? Because it seems to me one of those skills where it's just like, one day you're on them?
Do you think those people have spent their whole lives being like, I need to be up there. I need to be up there, and stilts is like
an
opportunity?
I think it's similar to being a very small person in this world, a little person, where you're more vulnerable when you're up there.
Wow. Okay.
I feel like it's a kid whose dad didn't put him on his shoulders at a parade or something like that.
Yeah,
so now he insists to never miss. No one will ever stand in front of me again.
Let me give you a counter argument. I think these stilt fucks want to look down on us. Maybe. I think they want to be up there looking down on us, thinking they're better than us, these maybe. Fucking giant stilt monsters.
I think, honestly, if a performer's on stilts and they see anyone in this room, they look at us and go, God, I wish my career was more in fucking line. Why am I a stilt walker, for fuck's sake?
To me, stilts are what hipsters are to people before us. Because like people on big bicycles and stuff like that, I just want to be seen as different and odd. I'm wearing stilts. I'm riding a big bicycle with one big wheel and one small. Like, I just want to be weird. I write on a
typewriter at the coffee shop.
Yeah. I
think there's a performance art to what they do.
Well, then I think it would have been great that in the last fight he would be like, bring me my stilts.
Yeah.
And then he fought on stilts.
There was just so much more fun to be had with him on stilts, fighting and jumping over things. And using his stilts he hopped off of them so quickly.
Or some sort of arbitrary scene when he's in Bangkok where he grabs two tent poles and kind of like improvised stilts. Like nothing of that pays off. Or like a little kid is crying and he clowns for him.
None of his clown training comes into play.
He's not a good clown.
But I think what we're supposed to believe from this movie is that the clown training set him up to be a pretty decent fighter, because he like kind of like does parkour to get away from those guys.
This is what I think.
And I'm like, this is fucking insane. Why can't we just show him fighting?
This is what I think. Controversially, I think he is not a clown. I don't think he has clown training. I think that is the front he uses as a criminal mastermind of a children's gang.
I'm with you.
And that's why the cops know who he is, and that's why the mob knows who he is. But they don't know him as the guy who's the clown. They know him as like a thief.
No, I would argue that they know him because it's so fucking obvious. Like, oh yeah, we don't like the clown because he's the one always stealing from us. Like, you can't blend in. It's arguably
because he's
one
the monster. Is like,
well,
come work for me.
Discredit the fact though that he did learn how to get on stilts.
Right, that's what I was about to say. He still has the skill set regardless.
Oh yeah, but I don't.
That makes you both right. That he's doing it under criminal auspices, but he does have the talent.
He does have the talent.
If he just knew that there were stilt fans in the world like you, he could have. He would have never had to fight in a tournament.
Oh, it's one of those classic. You know, it's a classic con man. You know, like he has the skills to exist in the real world successfully, but he'd rather use it for crime.
Someone edit June into a scene in this movie, putting like $1,000 into a hat and going,
"A rich lady from New York,
like in old New York." Like,
I just come down to watch the poor people on stilts. Here's a halfpenny.
So let's talk about the bar scene that helps set up the main bad guy who's also the same bad guy from Lionheart.
Is that the guy that looks like Steve Harvey?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, the Mongolian?
When she said that to me, I was like, he looks just like Steve Harvey.
He has the worst facial hair known to man because it's the ring.
Yes.
Not the goatee, not the mustache, but when you do a mustache and then a line of hair, it's a second set of hair lips that go around your mouth.
And now you are a Jean-Claude Van Damme expert, so I'll ask you this. In Bloodsport, I believe that the guy he fought was deaf because he never really spoke. He just kind of like vocalized as if he was going to say something, but no words came out. And this guy doesn't really speak at all.
This guy says nothing.
No.
I think this is more about casting based on looks than like oral abilities.
So his voice could be like, "Hi, I did think, hi, guys."
They demonstrate that this guy's a badass by having him knock out Remar in one punch, which I also think leads Maxie to go, "I'm not fighting in this fucking tournament."
I think Remar's like, "I'm out."
This movie for James Remar's character is a real gut punch.
He went back to business school. His character goes to business school at the end of this.
Fucking is the heavyweight champion of the world. Travels to Tibet and gets his ass repeatedly handed
knocked
to him.
Knocked out by a homeless clown and then knocked out by Genghis Khan cosplay.
By the way, this bad guy, this serves for a point to talk about some of the direction in this film. The slow-mo is used to not great effect in this because
that table, right?
He breaks a table, but they do it in slow-mo. I would think that breaking a table in fast motion is way more engaging. Like,
interesting you say that, because I felt that too. Like, when they cut to slow-mo, the fighting looked worse.
Oh, this is peak editing fighting.
Right.
This is peak, like, Bloodsport has it a lot, and you like, you know, like the Van Damme where he lands one kick, but the editing shows three of the same kicks in a row. And this is peak that, where it's like, it slows down at moments where there is no one is making contact with each other, and it's like, when he does like the flip backwards and kicks the sand into the guy's face, I'm like, that is like, physically, literally impossible. Like, to do a flip with your feet from under the sand and get the sand to go horizontal into someone's eyes. But they show it in slow motion, and it looks like they cut away at the moment that would be the thing you would want to show.
Yeah.
They just show a guy getting ready to jump in slow motion, which is not something you want to see.
Yeah, it felt like the slow-mo was all like gearing up.
They had to slow-mo that fist thing because they shot that slow. I feel like they just go, put your hand on the table. A prop guy will pull a rope and the whole thing. Because it shatters. And that doesn't shatter even. It crumbles. It turns to powder. It's so obviously artificial.
Well, and it's like, and everything in this thing, it's like the fight. It seems like when Bloodsport, they didn't use any doubles, right? That was the whole argument. But here, I feel like they probably used a lot of doubles.
Oh, yeah. I don't think James Remar is taking a fucking punch from some random Mongolian dude.
Big question. Why do Roger Moore and Jack McGee want that reporter who we haven't talked about yet?
Oh, but
to come along for this ride.
We haven't talked about this yet, right? And I think it's because Roger Moore wants to bone her.
Right.
Can I ask a question? I have a real question.
Finally.
What does she get from the news feed, the ticker tape?
No idea.
She has like a prized possession that she's like, I have everything you need or whatever. And she's holding a piece of paper and we never find out what was on it.
I think I know what that is.
Oh.
I think that is like permission or bankroll from the newspaper, from her dad, to cover this article, which means the cost of the boat ride and I think it's going to get them to.
She's financing this trip.
And is that why they're using her?
They are using her, I think, because Roger Moore wants to have sex with her because she's beautiful. And that is a Jean-Claude Van Damme trope, right?
A beautiful blonde reporter.
These movies destroy Bechdel. They like annihilate the Bechdel test. There's only one woman, and she's a reporter.
Yeah.
And in Bloodsport, she's a reporter who has to pretend to be a whore to get into something.
Here, she's a reporter who is like, you know, she's just, again, just wandering Bangkok looking for a story.
Yeah, the doesn't, only doesn't white even know person
about,
from my
again, like, why doesn't she know about this tournament? Why doesn't she, like, introduce this
idea? She has nothing going on.
And
she
neither really, does her and Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Yeah, they're not even love interests.
Until the very last minute where he puts his arm around her. I'm like, oh, they're together?
Yeah, no, I don't think so.
They seem more together than the New York guy.
And Roger Moore seems to give up on her as well. Like, I would have, like, the minute they get to, well, that's the thing is, this movie has indiscriminate plot points all the way up until the last 45 minutes, which are just a man saying the names of two countries. And then those two people fight.
Yes.
And that's
all this movie needs to be. Yes. I listened to all the episodes of How This Get Made. And I need a job. I was on the Street Fighter episode, I would have said that Street Fighter should have just been Bloodsport. Like, it should have just been like the video game where all the best characters just fight each other.
Yep.
It's a big tournament that there happens to be a guy named Blanca at.
But don't you think that was the deficit of this movie? Because there's no breaks in this movie. And you're just like, another fight with no stakes. And like, when is it gonna?
Well, because there's no one that could act in between scenes. Like in Bloodsport, they got Ogre that he can like deliver a line at least in between. That's sort of interesting. This shit has nothing. What goes good with tonic? Don't say it. Gin. I told you not to say it.
Then the horse says something. He goes, "Oh, quiet you."
I know.
That's why Roger Moore.
I can't believe we were only on the semifinals when we were. I was.
I know.
They've been fighting forever.
Forever.
They show every fight. That's the thing. They show every fight, but
every fight is
seven punches.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, and here's the thing: you've already been introduced to the fighting styles of each country, and then they just mix and match everyone.
Yeah. Now it's okay. It's now like, you see the winners.
Well, we've seen
that's
all
like
of these people.
Chekhov's sumo wrestler. You see him in the first act. He better fight by the end.
Exactly.
But that's why you're going to this movie. Like, if you're going, that's why you saw Bloodsport. That's why you liked it, at least for me growing up.
Yeah, you want to watch the fights.
It's like, oh, Monkey Man versus Sumo? Oh, the guy who does Muay Thai versus the guy who is the arbitrarily Arab, you know? Yep. Like,
well, I had an issue about the monkey guy or the snake guy.
Oh, dude, are you talking in this movie, it's China.
Yeah, China, because it goes, first of all, the best line in the whole movie to me was, he's moving like an animal. More like a snake. Yeah, well, I said that. I kind of said that. An animal.
And then in ADR, in the next sequence, he goes, now he's more of a monkey.
Yeah.
It's like,
the third one, he goes, tiger.
But to me, I said to Gina, I was like, I don't understand the mindset of this guy because it seems like he's also acting like a monkey, tiger, and snake
after the fact
that he's won. He's
and
like,
well before.
Yeah.
Before and after.
That's part of like the to really like, because if this is a real fighting tournament that has any kind of semblance of rules, which it doesn't, you'd probably say, like, hey, you're not allowed to play the bongos while the capoeira guy fights. Yeah. Like, come on.
Like,
that's
why
not fair.
Why does everyone have to bring their bongos to it?
It's fine.
You guys got backup musicians? Fine.
Yeah, I would have a fucking guy on an electric guitar just ripping it up, and I would have Doof Warrior shooting it. I'd be out there like, that's if they had that in Bloodsport, that's what Jackson would have had. Would have Leonard Skinner.
Would have Slash playing Welcome to the Jungle. That's what I would do. No, I wouldn't. I would, for real, just do Montel Jordan's This Is How We Do It.
Who was your favorite? All right, no, full disclosure. I can only get up to this game.
I will only fight and fuck to Montel Jordan's This Is How We Do It.
Who was your favorite of the fighters?
Well, to me, I'm going to go just jump right in and say the capoeira guy was amazing. And I call that like the Epcot of fights because it was like everyone was so, I am my country. Like, this is when you go to Epcot.
What about the Scottish guys? And when the fight at the end and they cut to the audience, everyone is in their cliched outfit.
Yes. You're like there's a Nazi guy with a Nazi helmet on.
He fights in jack boots and like red suspenders.
Okay, I now want to get to, that's a perfect segue. June, what did you think about what Jean-Claude Van Damme wore to fight? Do you have any thoughts on what
I'm
he was wearing?
I'm trying to remember.
Oh, interesting. He's wearing a tank top. He's wearing loose shorts.
Like loose pants.
Sweat shorts. White socks and work boots.
He's dressed like two very specific archetypes. 1980s bodybuilders and 1990s gay guys.
Yeah. I was like, he is dressed like
a West Hollywood gay dude
from like 10, 15 years ago. I was like, what is going on?
And the bandana.
And the rope bandana.
JCVD is a beautiful man.
Yeah.
I think he's a gorgeous man.
You're not going to find anyone to disagree.
I thought he looked great in this movie. I thought he looked great in Bloodsport.
Tiffany, like everyone knows who she is. My wife walked in when I was watching this, and she goes, "Is that Jean-Claude Van Damme in the sequence on the boat when he has a beard?" She's obviously into bearded dudes, and she goes, "Shit, he's really hot." And
I liked him with the beard.
He looked good with the beard.
He looked very Wolverine. He looked a little bit like Hugh Jackman.
Yes, he did.
He also, in this era where you've got Seagal, Stallone, Schwarzenegger, all these like Dolph Lundgren, all these kind of A to C level action stars, he is genuinely leading man handsome.
Right.
Oh, yeah. In a way that none of them are. In Bloodsport, I was so upset to see him in so many splits.
Yeah.
You want him to keep his job.
Because that's only ruining your lady boner for him.
I
feel like you might be in the minority on that, to be honest. I don't want to speak for women, but I think
ladies liked him in splits?
Oh, I think ladies like the splits and the buns.
Here's the thing. Let's get it out there. How did this get made, fans?
If you have an opinion,
to find out.
Call us at 619-PAUL, P-A-U-L, ask, A-S-K, and you can leave a message and we can talk
really
about it on the mini
episode.
Really,
the question is not like, oh, is that cool that he's in or can do a split?
Is it a turn on or a turn off? Turn on or turn off?
Like, I want to see a forum post that really digs in on this. I'll tell you
what a real turn off is
and
to
I
me.
Want it to be splits and buns.
All right. We'll go, guys, bring it to the phone line, bring it to the forums. The turn off literally was when the kilt man got his balls literally turned. Yeah.
That's by Turkey. I rewound it three times to hear how the guy announced his country because I could not sort it out. And he's not a visible race. Yes. Like, he's like a short, tan dude with long. He's like a mini Mandzukas. And you're going,
how dare you?
The fuck?
How dare you? How dare you compare me to the Turks? By the way, that Turk gets taken up pretty quick. The Greek guy does okay.
The Greek guy, by the way, who has got shoulder length blonde hair.
Blonde beard.
This guy is like, he's a Venice surfer.
He's from Cyprus.
By the way, his move of serving people spanakopita until they collapse is really bizarre.
By the way, though, the one question I did have about Jean-Claude's outfit is, this is my problem with him being a representative of Muay Thai, is like, is that what those guys were wearing?
No. That's what's crazy. That's not what he's worn at all in the movie.
No.
He didn't wear it on the boat. He didn't wear it in New York. He didn't.
You know what it is reminiscent of, though, is the street urchins.
He is dressed
ultimately he's fighting for.
Right, but he brought all that gear. He fought. It's weird that he's not in Muay Thai outfit.
Yeah, I agree.
He wears a Muay Thai outfit in fucking Bloodsport.
Well, he wears a Muay Thai outfit in the first round of fights before the Lost City.
Yes, and when he's
fighting in the Muay Thai fight when he's still owned by the Muay Thai Island guys.
But sometimes when he's just chilling out, he's wearing a nice collared striped shirt.
Totally.
Like a chambray shirt to hang out and look at the...
Van Damme's ability to rock a tucked-in dress shirt is like unbeknownst. Yeah. Every movie features him with a tucked in, you know, like the 90s like, tuck where you pull it out a little?
25 pleats. His pants have like, it's like literally like 42 pleats across.
Yeah. Wouldn't they be great like if he jumpers?
If it's like one of those, like one of those fans where like his head so many pleats, but when he does a split, it becomes like a big image.
Yeah.
Like it's like a real
tableau. It's like a crane landing in a sunset.
Basically like MC Hammer pants.
Oh, I love Squarespace. What is Squarespace? I'll tell you. If you've been listening to this podcast, you know one thing. Squarespace is the only place to make a website. Why? It's easy. It's intuitive. It's smart. And we all have ideas that need to be executed. What about that shop that you want to set up? Do you want to sell, I don't know, your own wicker chairs? Well, set up a store on Squarespace. You want to, you know, make a place to hold the funniest videos that you think are funny and people want to listen to? Great. Whatever you want to do. The World Wide Web is limitless. And Squarespace is basically saying, here's the key that will open the door to that unlimited listness. I'm not good at metaphors, but I am good at building websites thanks to Squarespace. I built two, paulshear.com and crashtestshow.com. They were easy to build. They made it fun. And the 24/7 customer support was amazing. Here's the deal. They got innovative, easy to use tools. Plus you get a free domain name if you sign up for a year. So start your free trial today. Just tool around. See if you can do something in 15 minutes. And I guarantee you, in 15 minutes, you'll have more than what someone would charge you hundreds of dollars to make a website. So go to squarespace.com. Use the offer code BONKERS to get 10% off your first purchase, okay? Don't let the web intimidate you. You intimidate the web. Kumite, the websites. Kick them in the balls by Squarespace. Okay, back to the show. I wanted to just bring up one thought to you guys. If it's a fight of the best fighters in the world, can we just say, hey, we know that everyone here can kick someone in the balls and disable them. Can we just take that off the table? No ball kicking in the best fights in the world, because I feel like
you that think that's a cheap move.
I think it's a cheap move. I feel like let's fight without the ball hits.
I like, feel like in year 7,000, you know, assuming that's a millennial long tournament,
right,
that it's got to adapt. Like UFC was the, when it first started, it was like guys could walk in with boxing gloves and shoes on and fight a guy in a full gi.
Yeah.
You didn't need any, and then eventually it was like, oh, let's just choke. Why isn't everyone just being choked to death in this fight? It's like, why am I going to stand back and let a guy spin three times, kick me in the head, when I can just hold him by his throat until he says, pleat like mate or whatever?
Yes.
That's what, none of these fights make sense. It's like, of course you want to make it good for movies, but everyone is everyone's style is showmanship. Like
everyone is doing a pre-show before their actual fight.
And it's all just
except for the Russian guy who just walks in and like gets his ass.
Oh, he was. I thought he was going to be the cool character too. I was like, I love this guy. Looks just like he looks like the worst dude to run into in Brighton Beach, and he's going to beat the fuck out of you.
I also like the school field trip that was clearly at the show. Like they at one point they cut to a group of kids like, hi, like the Lost City kids like, all right. So tomorrow, do your algebra, but tomorrow we go to the big fight. Like
everyone get your permission slips in and grab your little juice boxes.
Go ahead.
One thing is crazy is the guy that fought on the behalf of Spain.
Yes.
Yeah, the flamenco.
He's got a belt on it. He's got a flag on his belt.
Yeah.
He's fighting. He's like the most Spanish you could be. But that's not the Spanish flag.
No, oh, I don't know.
It was not the Spanish flag, because I remember that the Spanish flag was yellow, and I was like, this guy's got a different flag on. I looked it up. He's wearing an Albanian flag, because the actor is from Albania,
what?
And that just made it all the way through to the final cut.
He's also wearing, like, slacks.
Yes.
Like, he's wearing...
There's, like, three guys fighting in dress pants and dress shoes.
And jazz shoes.
They were, like, waiters a minute ago serving someone a drink, and they're like, oh, shit, I'm from Siam.
I have to represent my country right now in a fight to the death.
And everything is a country, and then a continent is the one black dude.
Africa.
It's like, Africa. Yeah. And he's, like, literally, like, a voodoo priest. You're like, please.
And he also has drums. He's the other guy that has a backing
band. The two black guys have music, unfortunately. Like it's like a movie made in the 90s.
It is like impossibly racist.
The one thing I want to talk about, and it probably will not ring true to anybody but me because I love this movie so much. But the stealing of the dragon at the end with the Nazi blimp is almost shot for shot identical to the Superman 2 breakout of Lex Luthor and Ned Beatty. Like, they're in a blimp. Like, Jack McGee can't get on the ladder. He almost gets on the ladder. He falls off the thing. Funny. And then Lex Luthor's like, see you later. I'm leaving.
Yeah.
It's comically the same exact scene, and the plan is so terrible. Let's steal a blimp, hoist this thing, and a blimp is not going to be able to lift.
And by the way, you're in a lost city. You got to go. You have to go far.
Also, you stole a Nazi blimp. Those guys, not forgiving.
Yeah. And by the way, it's 1926. They're just getting up and running.
But also, you can make that any nationality. This movie takes place. It's a global movie. You can leave the Nazis out of the, like why does it have to be Nazis? This movie wasn't made in the
1920s. That's like Indiana Jones said, man. Indiana Jones said the same thing.
Yeah, man. I would have loved it if Indiana Jones had entered this movie.
But at least in Indiana Jones, they're bad guys. Like, in this movie, you're like,
they're just kind of
the
like.
The weird thing about Roger Moore and Jack McGee, though, why at this point do they not think that
Van Damme could win?
Yeah. Why steal it at this point?
Yep.
Right. Why don't we wait and see it? There's a slight chance we get it for real.
And are we to believe that every year this tournament happens and every year there's a golden horse? That goes home with someone?
I think it's a dragon.
I'm so sorry.
But yes, dragon. You can ride it.
Okay, and it
first of all, that's like 100%. I know you fell asleep, quote unquote.
Those Scottish
dragon.
Very obviously.
Those Asian people just love horses.
But does remind it go home with the winner every
Paul,
year?
Right. Paul, make sure that June wants to take your kid for a horse ride, make sure that
I'm very aware
but
now.
But wait, no, June brings up a very valid point. Does that mean that there's been hundreds of years of this tournament, there's hundreds of giant golden dragons.
Yeah.
All, okay. Or does that guy always win?
They don't seem to give away the gold. I think the golden dragon is just like the fake
out.
Well,
no, they make a deal. They make a deal so that they don't kill Roger Moore and Jack McGee.
Oh, that was the deal.
Van Damme says, you can keep the golden dragon. If I win, you have to set us all free.
But I think Genghis Khan is the local.
The Mongolian?
He's like the house champion, it feels like. And it feels
Really?
That's
like
what it feels
from
like.
Lost City?
Yeah, he's from the like he's the Lost City's representative, even though he's dressed exactly like a barbarian from a video game.
Yeah.
That's what these movies are. Video games come to life.
Yes.
That's why
you,
and that's why they have to do their little dance or something, because that's like their like Chun-Li's like takes the picture or whatever, you know. All that shit is so fun.
By the way, a great moment in this movie when they do take a picture with an old 1920s camera, a great moment to just have a still and make it black and white.
Yeah.
But color picture. Yeah. Like it was like it's just like a small choice they could have made, like, and frozen in time. Nope. Color. Clearly we had an opinion about this movie, but there's some people out there that had a different opinion. It is now time for second opinions. All right, these are 5-star reviews culled from Amazon. There are not many second opinions on this film. There are not many 5-star reviews, but there are two that are worth it. And here we go. This is from Ox Bigley, and he writes...
Sounds like a bully from a cartoon.
I know, he really does. Hey, Ox Bigley's after me. The little rascals or something. I first saw this on Spanish TV, and I was so aggravated, I couldn't understand what was being said. But then I went to my video store and I rented it. Fantastic film. Although I do admit the plot could use a little work, but still an awesome movie. If you want to see how they should have done the Mortal Kombat film, get this DVD. Way better than the Street Fighter. Then again, I'm sure the Barney movie was better than that. 5 stars.
Whoa.
Wow.
Barney movie.
Now, this is...
Takes a shot in that one.
For the first time ever, we have someone who's done a second opinion on another movie coming to do a second opinion on this movie. And this is the man, his name is Jason Vine, and he has created the Jean-Claude Van Damme review matrix. We did this in the Bloodsport episode, so we will see how this stacks up. He's done this for Lionheart, Double Impact, Kickboxer, Universal Soldier, Nowhere to Run, Hard Target, Time Cop, and pretty much every one of them. But here we go for The Quest. Who is he? Christopher Dubois, whose story is too complicated for a one-sentence breakdown.
That's true.
Which family or friend must be avenged? No avenging needed. He's got kids to feed. Does he take his shirt off?
The closest he gets is a tank top version of a thong, which is true. He doesn't go shirtless.
Take his shirt off, yeah.
Does he have sex with a C-list actress? No sex. All business. Is there a tournament? Oh, yes, there is. Is training needed? Absolutely. And all the training takes place amidst the sweltering squalor of a Bangkok Muay Thai fighting world. But we don't see it. We don't see it. So I'd say no, there is training, but we don't see it.
It's all off camera.
Does he do splits in the training or in the tournament?
No.
It probably doesn't count, but after a vicious spin kick in the final battle, JCVD stretches a little to in slow-mo. And it's not really a split shot, but he's saying it's kind of a split shot.
No, it's not. I wish it was.
No, it's no split.
I'm glad it wasn't.
Does he punch someone in the balls? He delivers the reversed heel to the twins. It's patented by Ric Flair, so he considers that a punch, but it's a kick.
Other people get punched in the balls, so.
Does he do a series of flying or 360 kicks in slow-mo? I guess he does. So, is his enemy unbeatable? After beating every previous opponent with little more than a stiff jab, the final enemy for JCVD is a Mongolian beast, part Chong Li from Bloodsport and part Attila from Lionheart. Actually, the same actor who played Attila. And does he overcome injury or any other hindrance? A rarity for JCVD, the entire tournament is on the level. Nothing goes wrong. Does he win? Not only does he win, but he delivers what is probably his best overall fight scene in his career.
What?
I don't think so.
That's not true at all.
Part of the fight is in a room that we are not led. We are not seeing.
I did truly like that moment. I thought it was just a change of pace that fight.
I liked it too.
Also, they had to go outside at that point because someone, JCVD, who's directing it, must have been like, you know, the 60 minutes of this movie have been in this dark fucking warehouse. Why don't we spill out into the street? And then the fight. It's just one of those situations where it wraps up so fast. You can never live up to the hype.
Well, first of all, he also just appears, the whole fight appears, like for Jean-Claude Van Damme, who is all about kicking, it really is all about punching in this movie. He just is repeatedly punching the guy in the face. Punch, 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 punch. And it's like not very exciting.
Well, my favorite part of it is that they're fighting inside this house. And the house is like a long, like a tractor house, like almost like a trailer. And they move. Like the audience of the fight moves from left to right as they're going through the house, but the house is fully like covered.
Yeah.
So they can't see. So just by like, I guess, grunts, they're moving like it's like as if they could see it, they would move along, but they're just like, I guess he's over at this point.
It
now.
Reminds me of in Fargo season one when Billy Bob goes into the building.
Oh, and you see it,
and you just kind of track it. They ripped off the quest, I'll say
fucking
it.
Fucking Noah Hawley ripping off the quest once again.
Yeah, cool, man.
So then the fight ends. To no celebration at all.
No. It's actually, there's a somber mood that befalls the crowd. Like,
I think it's because all the people in the crowd are losers. They're previous people who lost the fight. Why are they sticking around? Who cares who wins at this point? Like, when they cut to the crowd and it is the two Scottish guys, I'm like, why are they still here? And they don't have a leg in. They don't give a fuck which one of these guys wins.
Yeah, go home.
Right.
And then go
start your journey home. It's 11 months.
You have like a 3-month journey to get home.
Conservative.
By the time they get home, they have to start the trip back to go to the next year's tournament.
There's a monk waiting with the, you got to be fucking kidding. Hey, you're one of the best.
Let's play what I think is probably the best writing in the entire movie. The wrap up. All right, so now they're going to go home. Here is JCVD's final voiceover.
I didn't get the golden dragon. But I returned to New York like I promised. Cut the kids off the streets. In the end, we all did just fine.
Well, how did he do that, though?
Maxi trained many great fighters and became a big celebrity. Last I heard, Dubs and Harry opened a trading post deep in the Amazon.
Like, that's not Jean-Claude Van
Damme. Their soul.
It's his old man voice. And then you reveal that he's reading a book backwards, because he closes the book on the first chapter.
Well, really doesn't make sense, though.
A book that was
written by the female reporter, but in his voice.
Yes. Yes. So the entire movie is a story being told by the female reporter, first person, as the character that Jean-Claude Van Damme is playing.
That's not even why don't they show him go back to the kids?
They just did fine. They didn't do great. Yeah. They didn't have an amazing
life. There's no way you leave for 9 months and a group of street kids they've managed to make it.
A bunch of those kids are dead.
100.
Oh, well, here's the thing. He is coming back with no money.
Right, that's what I'm saying. He comes back and he just has confidence from winning the fight.
How does he get those kids off the street?
Well, maybe he sold that gold necklace.
And by the way, there's more street kids. Oh, like, yeah, he doesn't definitely. Eradicate, like, definitely. Street urchins.
Yeah, he didn't end homelessness as far as...
Then, you know,
he's like, I won the fight, and then no kid was ever without a home.
I want to say, I don't know what you're about to start
up. No, go ahead.
Sorry,
no, please,
but this movie has... I read the IMDb trivia for every movie I've ever seen. This movie has the best IMDb trivia.
I have some here, some notes.
I can tell you some from recall that I remember reading, not even... And I read it again today, but there's some I remember from when I was...
Let me throw some at you, and you tell me if I miss any. The original director of this movie, or the one that JCVD wanted? Any guesses? I mean, you know it.
I know the answer. I'm not going to say it.
Any guesses? Oliver Stone.
Amazing.
The IMDb trivia says JCVD asked Oliver Stone to direct this, and he politely declined.
Yep. This one is Tatum O'Neill claims in her autobiography that she was offered the female lead first, but things fell apart after a romance with her and JCVD failed.
Whoa.
So
in the IMDb trivia, there's four trivia pieces that are all about how much Roger Moore hated this movie.
Oh, like it's so
like,
much.
It's like he was
least
told.
Favorite.
Yeah, he said in his biography, it's his least favorite movie he's ever been part of. He was told he was going to get above the line billing and he didn't. There's like, it's like 11 straight complaints. He talks about it. It's the worst movie he's ever
done.
Embarrassed by it. And just if you want to know more about this experience and the world of JCVD, you can check out slashfilm.com because there is now a rebuttal interview to last week's Frank Dukes interview because Sheldon Lettich, who wrote Bloodsport and is involved in this world, read that article, got angered, and now is rebutting.
Also the writer
Frank
of
Dukes.
Lionheart, which is the better quest.
And Frank Dukes is very much involved in a big lawsuit here because he claimed that he wrote this movie called The Kumite Enter the Dragon. It's a big deal.
He won arbitration WGA.
Yes.
Frank Dukes got story by credit on this movie, but he didn't win the civil lawsuit.
Right,
that he
lost the court case.
I could talk to you about Frank Dukes / Count Dante for like hours. Are you guys familiar with Count Dante from the back of like Boys Life magazine?
No.
Oh, no.
He's a very similar to Frank Dukes type character who swears that he fought in all these, like, he said he killed over 50 people in different kumites and then taught karate in Chicago and was part of what was called the Dojo Wars, where he got arrested for setting up explosives at a rival dojos. And that's all real.
This is insane.
I love it.
This world is amazing.
Search Count Dante and Frank Dukes on Wikipedia and have a fucking great afternoon.
Here is the thing I will tell you. If you have dear corrections and omissions, leave them on the Earwolf message board, or you can call us at 619-PAUL-ASK. And I'll leave you with this before we get into plugs. Jean-Claude Van Damme's definition of the movie. This movie is about a dream. But also adventure. It is epic. Has many faces. Many corners.
Ooh.
It is the shape of a diamond.
Oh, boy.
And that is my definition of the quest.
Wow.
The shape of a diamond.
Many faces and many corners.
Yeah.
I don't think he's seen a movie nor a diamond.
Wow. Well, I'm so glad that you were here, John.
Please,
what would you like to plug?
Right now, I guess the only thing I would have to plug is check out my podcast, search High and Mighty on iTunes. And if you're a fan of – I have done some action movie
You have reviews. A very extensive Bloodsport episode.
I have a Bloodsport episode. I've done some other action movies and all stuff. Right. I've actually tried to avoid overlap with How Did This Get Made.
Oh, very nice. Thank you.
So because we passed on doing Cobra.
Okay.
More than welcome.
We've done two Seagal movies and plenty
more
to come. There
is plenty of room for people talking about movies that they love.
Yeah.
So you go right ahead.
So check out High and Mighty. And if you're a fan of the TV show Banshee, I'm actually starting like a weird side project where I'm doing like recap and interview episodes about Banshee.
I cannot wait.
And I have nothing to do with that show other than I'm a fan.
I can't wait to watch that show. I've heard it's so great. Jason?
I got nothing.
June?
I'll plug the second season of Grace and Frankie, which comes out on May 6th on Netflix, and also a movie that I saw recently and I love and I think might still be out in the theaters, The Bronze, starring Melissa Rauch.
Oh, yeah, The Bronze.
Hilarious.
Well, I'll give a big thank you to everybody here at Earwolf. Avril Halley for pulling all these clips. Nate Kiley for doing all of his research. Marissa Zeitz for all the help. Leanna Waldron for designing amazing images. And everybody, Ryan, our engineer, thank you so much. Thank you guys so much for coming. Bye-bye. TV has never been better, but with all the contracts and equipment fees and installation fees, it feels like you need to take out a mortgage just to watch your favorite shows. But why? Why when there's a better, cheaper way to get the shows that you love? It's called Sling TV. TV. That's right, Sling TV. Just for $20 a month, you get more than 20 live channels, including AMC, ESPN, Adult Swim, TNT, TBS, and True TV. Start your 7-day trial at sling.com/bonkers. That's B-O-N-K-E-R-S for the best live TV on your tablet, phone, laptop, Roku, Fire TV, or Xbox. Let me tell you, I do this when I travel. It's so great. I don't have to be beholden to what's on the hotel TV. I love it. And plus, for you out there who don't want to pay those big cable bills, Sling TV is where it's at. If you like TV, you'll like Sling TV.
What is the mysterious secrets of Uncle Bertie's Botanarium?
Netted Spaghettarium Nocturnum. The night spaghetti.
It looks like spaghetti.
Yes, but specifically when you eat it at night.
Why, none other than the biggest, boldest Howl original show yet.
I've seen a crab with 7 legs.
Starring Jemaine Clement in a truly original fantasy adventure.
Oh, what's that awful smell, Solinter?
That's the sea air, sir.
Experience the mysterious secrets of Uncle Bertie's Botanarium today, only on Howl. This has been an Earwolf production, executive produced by Scott Aukerman, Adam Sachs, and Chris Bannon. For more information and content, visit earwolf.com.
Hey, it's Jason Mantzoukas wishing Scott and everybody else of all stars and stripes a happy 15th anniversary, Comedy Bang Bang. You goddamn did it. Eat shit. Hang on, man. Comedy Bang Bang. Comedy Bang Bang.